Here we have been doing chapter studies on various books of the Bible. I've been working on Judges. So what we're going to talk about tonight is chapter 6, 7, and 8 of the book of Judges, which deals with the judge Gideon. I may cut this off at halfway if I get to talking too long. I'll apologize for that in advance, but I want to try to cover as much of this as we can. Just to kind of give a background on where we're at as far as God's people are concerned in this chapter and in this book. If you'll remember, when Moses led the children of Israel out of Egypt, they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years because of their unbelief and faith in God. And their lack of faith in their own ability to go in with God's help into the promised land and to rout those people and to take over that possession. And eventually they were able to go in after all the men that were 20 years or older that had left Egypt had died. You'll remember Joshua and Caleb were the only two that were left. And they led the children of Israel into the promised land. Before they went in there, when Moses was still alive, if you'll remember, there was a couple of the tribes, I think it was Reuben, Gad, and maybe half the tribe of Manasseh, had wanted to stay on the wilderness side of the promised land. They raised cattle and sheep. They liked the land there. They wanted to stay there. And Moses told them they could stay there, but all of the men that were old enough to fight would have to go into the promised land first and help them clean out the people that were there. And then once they were had accomplished that task, they could go back and be with their families on the wilderness side of the promised land. And so under the leadership of Joshua, we see throughout the book of Joshua where the Jews strove to drive these people out. And for the most part, they were able to do that. But there were some people that remained in those lands that they hadn't totally killed off as God had told them to do. And because of that, we see constantly throughout the rest of the Old Testament where these various tribes and groups of people rise up against the Jews, and oftentimes it's not in war, but it's just their lifestyle causes the Jews to stray away from the things they're supposed to do. When Moses died and turned leadership over to Joshua, he led the children of Israel into the promised land. At the end of the book of Joshua, we see where he calls the people together and he reminds them of what God has done for them. And he asks them whether they're going to serve God or the false gods of the people around them. And they say, we will serve the Lord. But what we see in the book of Judges is, as the Jews were often guilty of doing, is they lost their faith in God. They were drawn away from God by the pagan things that the pagans did. They found that more attractive than what God wanted them to do. And so time and time again, they would lose their faith in God, and they would go after strange gods and worship strange gods and all the sinful practices that were involved in that. And so from the period from when Joshua died until the kings were established to rule over Israel, beginning with Saul and then David and Solomon, and then that progression, we see there's a period of time there that's covered by the book of Judges. And what we see with the state of the children of Israel at this time is they're very tribal. You'll see at various times throughout the book of Judges where some of these people that they were supposed to chase out of the promised land and to get rid of so they wouldn't be an evil influence on them come back to haunt them, so to speak. And so in this case, with the case with Gideon, we're going to see the Midianites are the ones who rise up against them. And it's kind of a more of a territorial thing. It doesn't affect the whole nation of Israel. It's more of various tribes that are affected. But what we see is that there's no more unity there between the tribes. When they went into the promised land, as we mentioned, they were all supposed to fight on a unified front and for a common goal was to possess the promised land. But we see that now, in this period of time, they're very tribal and they don't always get along and don't always support one another like they should. And when some of them begin to go astray, the ones that are still mindful of what God would have them to do aren't trying to help them out. And so at the end of chapter 5, we saw where Barak and Deborah had gotten the people right with God again, and that period of time lasted for a bit. But then, as we see over and over again, they begin to backslide and step back away from the things that God would have them to do. And that's the state we find the Jews in at the beginning of chapter 6. So I begin reading chapter 6, beginning in verse 1 of the book of Judges. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens which are in the mountains and caves and strongholds. And so it was, when Israel had sown, that the Midianites came up, and the Amalekites and the children of the east, even they came up against them. And they encamped against them and destroyed the increase of the earth, till thou come into Gaza, and left no substance for Israel, neither sheep nor ox nor ass. For they came up with their cattle and their tents, and they came as grasshoppers for multitude, for both they and their camels were without number, and they entered into the land to destroy it. And Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. And it came to pass, when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord because of the Midianites, that the Lord sent a prophet unto the children of Israel, which said unto them, Thus say the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up from Egypt, and brought you forth out of the house of bondage, and I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians, and out of the hand of all that oppressed you, and drave them out from before you, and gave you their land. And I said unto you, I am the Lord your God, fear not the God of the Amorites, in whose land ye dwell, but ye have not obeyed my voice. So here we see again where the Jews have become lax in their worship and service to God. And like we see in the world today, it's not really much different. We see our friends and neighbors, and unfortunately sometimes even our members of our own family, who drift away from God or never embrace the Word of God, and they're drawn away by the sinful things that are in the world. And so we realize that that's nothing new. Solomon said in the book of Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun, and certainly that's true when it comes to disobeying God and falling into sin. And so, as we see people do today, they have no care or concern for God until their situation becomes dire. Then all of a sudden, they want God to come and rescue them. And so that's exactly what's happened to the Israelites here. They've been attacked by these various groups of people. They've been forced to flee into the mountains, and they're living in caves, starving to death, and not able to get to crops or anything to eat. And so now they're going to cry out to God for help when they've put their own selves in that situation. And God is reminding them what it is that he had done for them. And they're in that situation because they wouldn't cling to God and serve him the way that he asked to be served. We'll continue reading with verse 11. And there came an angel of the Lord and sat under an oak which was in Ophrah, that pertained unto Joash the Abizurite. And his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him, The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. And Gideon said unto him, O my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why then is all this befallen us? And where be all his miracles which our fathers told us of, saying, Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord hath forsaken us and delivered us into the hand of the Midianites. And the Lord looked upon him and said, Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee? And he said unto him, O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. And the Lord said unto him, Surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. And he said unto him, If now I found grace in thy sight, then show me a sign that thou talkest with me. Depart not hence, I pray thee, until I come unto thee, and bring forth my present, and set it before thee. And he said, I will tarry until thou come again. And Gideon went in, and made ready a kid, and unleavened cakes of an ephah of flour, and flesh he put in a basket, and put the broth in a pot, and brought it out unto him under the yoke, and presented it. And the angel of God said unto him, Take the flesh and unleavened cakes, and lay them upon this rock, and pour out the broth. And he did so. Then the angel of the Lord put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand, and touched the flesh and the unleavened cakes. And there rose up fire out of the rock, and consumed the flesh and the unleavened cakes. Then the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. And when Gideon perceived that he was an angel of the Lord, Gideon said, Alas, O Lord God, for because I have seen an angel of the Lord face to face. And the Lord said unto him, Peace be unto thee, fear not, thou shalt not die. Then Gideon built an altar there unto the Lord, and called it Jehovah Shalom, unto the day it is yet in Ophrah of the Abizurites. So now God has chosen Gideon to go forth and to deliver the Jews once again because of their unbelief and their failure to worship God. They once again have to be rescued from their own, a situation of their own making. And of course, this has valuable lessons to us even today as Christians, how we can mess up our lives and we realize that by turning to Jesus that he can save us from our sins. And if we are already a child of God and we fall away, that we can be restored. And so Gideon has been appointed the task now to be God's judge at this point in time. We'll continue reading in verse 25. And it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, take thy father's young bullock, even the second bullock of 7 years old, and throw down the altar of Baal that thy father hath, and cut down the grove that is by it, and build an altar unto the Lord thy God upon the top of this rock in the ordering place, and take the second bullock and offer a burnt sacrifice with the wood of the grove which thou shalt cut down. Then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord said unto him. And so it was, because he feared his father's household, that the men of the city and the men of the city, that he could not do it by day, that he did it by night. And when the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was cast down, and the grove was cut down that was by it, and a second bullock was offered upon the altar that was built. And they said one to another, who hath done this thing? And when they inquired and asked, they said, Gideon the son of Joash hath done this thing. Then the men of the city said unto Joash, bring out thy son, that he may die, because he hath cast down the altar of Baal, and because he hath cut down the grove that was by it. And Joash said unto all that stood against him, will ye plead for Baal? Will ye save him? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death while it is yet morning. If he be a god, let him plead for himself, and because one hath cast down his altar. Therefore on that day he called him Jerubbaal, saying, let Baal plead against him, because he hath thrown down his altar. So the Jews had fallen into idolatry once again, and Baal was one of the false gods that they often turned to. And so at this place they had built an altar to Baal, and they had planted a grove of trees, which is another way that they worshipped as pagans. And the angel tells Gideon to go and to cut down the trees and to build a fire and offer a sacrifice there to God. And I believe it was Gideon's father was one of the ones who built this altar and planted this grove. And when they come to ask him what was going on, he said, well, if Baal is a real god, he can come and take care of this situation himself. You don't have to do it for him. And, of course, that kind of opened Gideon's eyes to the father's eyes to the fact that this god that he had, this false god that he had been worshiping, was indeed something that was just made up by the people that they were around. And he, in defense of his son, he said, let Baal come and defend himself. And, of course, Baal not being real, that didn't happen. So we'll continue now, verse 33. Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east were gathered together and went over and pitched in the valley of Jezreel. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, and Abzir was gathered after him. Abzir is one of the tribes of Manasseh. And he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, and also was gathered after him. And he sent messengers unto Asher and unto Zebulun and unto Naphtali, and they came up to meet them. And Gideon said unto God, if thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said, behold, I will put a fleece of wool in the floor, and if the dew be on the fleece only, and it be dry upon all the earth beside, then shall I know that thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, and thou hast said. And it was so, for he rose up early on the morning, and thrust the fleece together, and wring the dew out of the fleece a bowl full of water. And Gideon said unto God, let not thine anger be hot against me, and I will speak but this once. Let me prove, I pray thee, but this once with the fleece, let it now be dry upon all the fleece, and upon all the ground let there be dew. And God did so that night, and it was dry upon the fleece only, and there was dew on all the ground. So even after all these things happen, we see that Gideon has some reservation about whether or not God is really telling him to do these things. And so as a proof of that, he puts a fleece out, and the first night the fleece is covered with dew, but the ground is not. And he's able to wring a bowl full of water out of the fleece. And so he asked God for one more sign, and that was the next morning that the ground would be covered with dew, but the fleece wasn't. And of course, this happened, and then Gideon was finally resolved that this was a thing that God wanted to do. Now, in the beginning of chapter 7, we're going to see that Gideon has raised his army to go and fight against the Midianites, but God is going to have him reduce the number of his army quite significantly, down to the point where he's only going to have 300 men. And anybody that knows anything about history or the idea of military strategy and things of this nature, the number 300 is significant. Maybe not so much for the battle of Gideon, the battle that Gideon's about to wage, but there was a battle in 480 BC, the Battle of Thermopylae, between the Greeks and the Medo-Persians. And this is something that's much revered by military people. And if you go back and read history, you'll realize that there were 300 Spartans there, but there was also a lot of other people involved in that. So it wasn't quite the miraculous thing that fiction sometimes would have you believe, but it's much revered that this idea that a small amount of men could take on an army and be successful. But we know that Gideon was able to do that by, it wasn't because of the training or the military method that he had, but it was from the power of God. Also of note is the fact that Gideon ruled as a judge from 1191 to 1151 BC, and this is over 1,000 years before that battle of Thermopylae. We'll continue. We'll read chapter 7, beginning of verse 1. Then Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, and all the people that were with him, rose up early and pitched beside the well of Herod, so that most of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Moriah in the valley. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. Now therefore go to proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. And there returned to the people 22,000, and there remained 10,000. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down into the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee, and whomsoever I say unto thee, this shall not go with me, the same shall not go. So I brought down the people under the water, and the Lord said unto Gideon, every one that lappeth out of the water with his tongue as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, every one that boweth down upon his knees to drink. And a number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men. But all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you, and deliver the Midianites into thine hand, and let all other people go, every man unto his place. So the people took victuals in their hand and their trumpets, and sent all the rest of Israel, every man unto his tent, and retained those 300 men, and the host of Midian was beneath him in the valley. So God is setting up a situation here where it's going to be no doubt to these Israelites that he allowed them, he gave them the power and ability to win this battle. He told Gideon, if you have too many men and you go down there and win, everybody's going to say, we did this on our own. We didn't need God's help to defeat these people. So he's going to make them the underdog. He's going to put them at a disadvantage to show that he is with them. And the test that he gives is he tells everybody that's afraid to just leave and go home. And of course, if you've ever seen movies or documentaries about what battle was like at that time, one good wound would, you may not bleed out or die right away, but you would certainly die of infection or something of this nature. It was a horrible way to have to die. And so people that were afraid were told to go home, and a good portion of them left at that time. He then told God, then told Gideon to send them down to the water and have them drink. And everybody that got down on their hands and knees and lapped the water like an animal would, he said to send them home. And those who knelt down and cupped the water in their hand and drink it and kept an eye on what was going on around them, these were the ones that were going to be worthy to fight. And so now his army has been reduced to 300 men, and he's going to have to go up against the might of the Midianites. We'll continue reading in verse 9. And it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, arise, get thee down into the host, for I had delivered it into thine hand. But if thou fear to go down, go thou with Phurah thy servant down to the host, and thou shalt hear what they say, and afterward shall thine hands be strengthened to go down into the host. Then went he down with Phurah his servant unto the outside of the armed men that were in the host, and the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along in the valley like grasshoppers for multitude, and their camels were without number, and as a sand by the seaside for multitude. And then Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came into a tent, and smote it that it fell, and overturned it, that the tent lay along. And his fellow answered and said, this is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. For in his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. And so it was when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof, that he worshipped and returned unto the host of Israel and said, arise, for the Lord hath delivered into our hand the host of Midian. So Gideon goes down and kind of spies on the camp there, the Midians, and he hears this dream, and somebody tell the interpretation of the dream that Gideon was going to destroy them. And God, and Gideon recognizes this as a sign from God and realized that he was going to be successful. So he goes back and prepares his men for the battle. Continuing in verse 16. And he divided the 300 men into three companies, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitchers. And he said unto them, look on me and do likewise, and behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall ye do. When I blow with the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side of all the camp, and say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. So Gideon and the hundred men that were with him came into the outside of the camp in the beginning of the middle watch, and they had put newly set in the watch. And they blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers that were in their hands. And the three companies blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers and held the lamps in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands to blow withal. And they cried, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And they stood every man in his place round about the camp, and all the host ran and cried and fled. And the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, even throughout all the hosts. And the host fled to Beshitha in Zithria, and the border of Abimelon unto Tabith. And the men of Israel gathered themselves together out of Naphtali and out of Asher and out of Manasseh and pursued after the Midianites. And Gideon sent messengers throughout all Mount Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites and take before them the waters unto Bethberah and Jordan. Then all the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together and took the waters unto Bethberah and Jordan. And they took two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeb. And they slew Oreb upon the rock Oreb, and Zeb they slew at the winepress of Zeb, and pursued Midian, and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon on the other side of Jordan. So we see that because God was with them, they were able to rout these people and to drive them out from their land. We'll continue reading in chapter 8. And the men of Ephraim said unto him, why hast thou served us thus, that thou callest us not, even thou wentest to fight with the Midianites? And they did chide with him sharply. And he said unto them, what have I done now in comparison to you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abzir? God hath delivered unto your hands the prince of Midian, Oreb and Zeb. And what was I able to do in comparison to you? Then their anger was abated toward him when he had said that. And Gideon came to Jordan, passed over, he and 300 men that were with him, faint yet pursuing them. And he said unto the men of Succoth, give, I pray thee, loaves of bread unto the people that follow me, for they be faint, and I am pursuing after Zeba and Zalmunna, kings of Midian. And the princes of Succoth said, in the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna, now in thine hand, that it should give bread unto thine army. And Gideon said, therefore, when the Lord hath delivered Zeba and Zalmunna into mine hand, then will I tear your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. And he went up thence to Peniel and spake unto them likewise. And the men of Peniel answered him as the men of Succoth had answered him. And he spake also unto the men of Peniel, saying, when I come again in peace, I will break down this tower. Now Zeba and Zalmunna were in Kekor, and their hosts with them, about 15,000 men, all that were left of all the hosts of the children of the east. And there fell 120,000 men that drew sword. And Gideon went up by the way of them that dwell in tents on the east of Nobab and Julaphath, and smote the host, for the host was secure. And when Zeba and Zalmunna fled, he pursued after them and took the two kings of Midian, Zeba and Zalmunna, and discomfited all the host. And Gideon, the son of Joash, returned from battle before the sun was up. and caught a young man of the men of Succoth and inquired of him, and he described unto him the princes of Succoth and the elders thereof, even 70 men. And he came unto the men of Succoth and said, Behold, Zebah and Zalumah, with whom ye did unbraid me, saying, Are the hands of Zebah and Zalumah now in thine hand, that we should give bread unto the men that are weary? And he took the elders of the city and thorns of the wilderness and briars with him, and he taught the men of Succoth, and he beat down the tower of Peniel and slew the men of that city. So we see that Gideon punishes these people who refused to help them in their pursuit of doing what it was that God had wanted them to do. We'll finish out by reading the rest of chapter 8. Excuse me. Then said Zebah and Zalumah, What manner of men were they whom ye slew at Tabor? And they answered, As thou art, so are they. Each one resembled the children of a king. And he said, Why were my brethren, even the sons of my mother, as the Lord liveth, if ye had saved them alive, I would not slay you. And he said unto Jether his firstborn, Up and slay them. But the youth drew not his sword, for he feared, because he was yet a youth. Then Zebah and Zalumah said, Rise thou and fall upon us, for as the man is, so is his strength. And Gideon arose and slew Zebah and Zalumah, and took away the ornaments that were on their camels' necks. Then the men of Israel came unto Gideon, Rule thou over us, both thou and thy sons also, for thou hast delivered us from the hand of Midian. And Gideon said unto them, I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you, the Lord shall rule over you. And Gideon said unto them, I would desire a request of you, that you would give me every man the earrings of his prey, for they had golden earrings because they were Ishmaelites. And they answered, We will willingly give them. And they spread a garment and did cast therein every man the earrings of his prey. And the weight of the golden earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, beside ornaments and collars and purple raiment that was on the kings of Midian, and besides the chains that were about their camels' necks. And Gideon made an ephod thereof and put it in his city, even in Ophrah, and all Israel went thither a-whoring after it, which thing became a snare unto Gideon and to his house. Thus was Midian subdued before the children of Israel, so that they lifted up their heads no more, and the country was in quietness 40 years in the days of Gideon. And Jerubbaal the son of Joash went and dwelt in his own house, and Gideon had 70 sons, and his body had of his body begotten, for he had many wives. And his concubine that was in Shechem also bare him a son, whose name he called Abimelech. And Gideon, the son of Joash, died in a good old age and was buried in the sepulcher of Joash's father in Ophrah of the Abizarites. And it came to pass, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel turned again and went a-whoring after Balaam and made Baal-berith their god. And the children of Israel remembered not the Lord their God, who had delivered them out of the hands of all their enemies on every side, neither showed they kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, namely Gideon, according to all goodness which he had showed unto Israel. So it would almost seem like some people would consider the moral of this story is be careful who you help, because they're not going to appreciate it. And certainly that must have been the way that God felt, because here he had done all these great things to deliver the Jews from their enemies, and they went to Gideon and tried to get him to become their king, and he didn't want to be a king. And so he refused that responsibility or that office, and he told the Jews it was up to them to let God be their king and be their guide. And, of course, once he was gone and his influence was gone, they went right back to doing what they had done before. And, of course, we're going to see this pattern repeat itself several more times before we finish our study of the book of Judges. And it's sad that people are that way, and it's sad that people are that way today, but it's an important lesson for us to remember that when times are good, we shouldn't forget about God. Too many times people turn to God when someone is sick or there's some kind of problem, and that's when they really only want to have any kind of interest in God is when they need help or they need something. That kind of goes along the lines with what Dennis talked about this morning, is people thinking too much about a blessing being something that's physical. Is when people are in physical need, that's when they want to turn to God. But we realize that we have to serve and worship God regardless of what our situation is, whether we're healthy or sick or rich or poor. It's in many ways it's like marriage, and the relationship between God and man is often described that way, or between Jesus and the church is described as a marriage. When times get bad, We want to turn to God, but when times are good, we need to thank God for the blessings, both spiritual and physical, that He has bestowed upon us, and realize that we have to serve Him at all times if we want to please Him, and we can't be distracted and drawn away from the truth by the ways of the world, as we saw happen so many times to His children, the Jews, in the Old Testament. That brings us to the conclusion of our study this evening. Thank you for your attention. We certainly wouldn't want to end a service without offering the services of the church to those who would. Won't you come while we stand and sing the invitation song?